Thank you very much, Tan Pu Ying. She was apologizing for the technical difficulties, but I think it's also not a bad thing that we learn to use our own natural voices as well. Artificial intelligence is advancing. They used a lot of AI technology, both with the Pali scholars and with computer scientists, to put the Tipitaka together, so the whole Tipitaka can be artificially recited. They haven't quite got the fluidity. Yang Mai Klong Roi Pasen. But they're working on it, so it's a wonderful thing that you can hear the sound of the Tipitaka with very correct pronunciation generated by a non-human voice, an artificially generated voice that won't get tired, and every Pali word can be pronounced. So this occasion is very, say, inspiring, very auspicious. Quite a few people came today thinking this was an quote-unquote ordinary Saturday at Amravati, and so they have been very pleasantly surprised. So I'm very happy to welcome the World Tipitaka Foundation here, led by Tan Pu Ying Warapuan and so many old friends. As you might have seen in the introductory films that were shown this morning, I was there in Abhayagiri Monastery to be part of the community that received the Tipitaka offering that the same group made many years ago now. So it's lovely. I didn't expect to be moving to Amravati at that time. So I'm very happy that I am here, and that also that had the opportunity to welcome this group. Today we've had a windy, rainy day. Also the technical difficulties with the machine not wanting to follow our instructions. But this is life, isn't it? You know, you plan for a special day, and then there's wind and rain. And the practice of the Dhamma Vinaya, the legacy that we have inherited from the Lord Buddha, is in a way exactly the tools that we need to deal with whatever life presents for us. We would like a sunny day, but it's windy and rainy. We would like our machine to work and obey our wishes. It doesn't. But this is ben tamada, this is ordinary, tamacha, this is natural. The word tamachat in the Thai language comes from the Pali Dhamma Jati, which literally means born of the Dhamma. So when we say something is natural, then we're saying it's born of the Dhamma. When we say something is ordinary, like this is an ordinary day at Amravati, the Thai word for ordinary is tamada, which comes from the Pali word dhammata, meaning of the nature of Dhamma. So when we use the word ordinary, we think unremarkable, not special, kind of, it's okay. nothing to be particularly interested in or to give much value to. But if we look inside, we see that within the ordinary, there is the nature of the Dhamma. So the legacy of the Lord Buddha is that regardless of the circumstances, whether it's what we like or we don't like, whether it's ordinary, that we can find peace, we can find freedom, we can find happiness in every circumstance. And this is, say, the great treasure of the Buddha's teaching, is that it shows us over and over again that even though we can't change the natural world, we can't change the weather just by snapping our fingers or wishing it to be different, but what we can do, where we do have control, is in our attitude. We can establish the skillful attitude, the tasanagati in Thai language. We can establish a skillful attitude towards life, whether it's what we like, what we don't like, whether it's what is pleasing or displeasing or really ordinary. the source of happiness, the source of freedom, the source of peace is in the attitude, or what we would say in Pali, the right view, samaditi, the right view, right understanding. In the Tipitaka, in the very first discourse of the Buddha, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which we recite very regularly here in this temple, The Buddha established several different frameworks or different models for his teaching. He spelled out the Four Noble Truths, the Arya Satya, for the first time. And when he was describing the Four Noble Truths to his companions, the five friends that he had reconnected with in the deer park in Varanasi, then as he spelt them out, saying there are these four principles which if we understand these, if we see these and put these into action in a skillful way, then this will lead to the end of dukkha. This will bring peace, this will bring happiness, this will bring freedom. So for each of those Four Noble Truths, there is three aspects. And those of you who have been familiar with Lumpo Sumato's teachings will know he talks about this over and over again. It's a very frequent theme. So for each of the truths, not to get too technical, but you have the first part, say, idang dukkang, this is dukkha, arya sacchanti me bhikkhave, this is dukkha, idang dukkang. So there is that, say, bringing to mind the idea, there is this quality of dukkha. At that moment, it's just a word, it's just a concept. So that is the pariyati, the study. So this is the beginning part of learning Dhamma. So we have these wonderful books, these 40 volumes of the Tripitaka, the Tipitaka. So the first step of making full use of them is to open the books and read the words. So pariyati is study. So getting your mind onto the subject. So that is the first stage of the penetration, the realization of all of the Four Noble Truths. So they all begin with P, so it's easy to remember. Pariyati is the first one. Patipati is the second one. That means to put into practice. Not only do you read the words, not only do you get the concepts into your memory, your conceptual understanding, but you put it to work, you practice. So we talk about patipat in Thai or patipata in the Pali language. So that in each of the four truths, then the Buddha lays this out. So for the first noble truth, idang dukkang, this is dukkha. Parinyeyanti, it should be understood, it should be apprehended, it should be acknowledged. This is dukkha. That's what you need to do. That's the practice that we need to do to say work with the experience of dukkha or dissatisfaction. And then the third one is pativeda, or realization. So having got the concept of dukkha, having worked with it in a skillful way, then the result of having worked with it is pativeda, which is realization and liberation, that the change of heart that happens when we realize, oh, right, this is dukkha. This is what this experience is. And the heart, by knowing it, by practicing with it, then is led towards liberation. So in order to make use of these wonderful 40 volumes that we've been gifted here and have been enshrined today at Amravati, then we need all three of those P's, pariyati, patipati, pativeta, and study, practice, realization. And so our obligation, in a way, the way we repay the kindness of the generosity of those who have done all of the work. I think it was about 10 years preparing the manuscript. 20 years preparing the manuscript. And all of the research of the different source texts, the cross-referencing, the catching all the mistakes in the different editions. That's an amazing amount of work. And then the sponsors in Thailand, I think Khun Pia Lamsam was one of the main contributors to helping to sponsor the printing of this. To the group, the World Tipitaka Foundation, not only organizing it, but bringing it over here and arranging for it to come to Amravati. So to repay that great kindness and generosity, then it's up to us as a monastic community, the lay community who live here, all those who use these resources to study it, practice it, realize it. That's the challenge, or that's the opportunity also for us. The other day, I was up at Harnam, Aruna Ratnagiri Monastery in Northumberland, and Lumpo Sujito was giving a Dhamma talk. And he made the point that the Buddha Sasana, and particularly the order of monastics that the Buddha established, this is the oldest human institution still functioning under its original bylaws. not to boast, but but we're the oldest. We're the oldest tree in the forest. And that's something not just to be proud of, but also to reflect on how come this institution still runs according to its original principles 25 centuries, 2,500 years after the Lord Buddha walked the earth and spoke these words gathered behind us. That's amazing. 500 BC, here in this part of the country, it wasn't even the late Iron Age, it was the early to middle Iron Age. That was 500 years before the Romans came. A long time ago. But this teaching, this community has lasted all that time. So that's an amazing thing. And I feel that what is the glue that has held it together is the many thousands, countless millions of people who have studied, practiced, and realized these teachings. But also, just preserving the words is not what keeps a religion alive. Just chiseling the Pali into the rocks or reciting the words over and over, that's not what keeps a religion alive. For a religion to last, for an institution to last, it's got to work. It's got to actually be something that changes our lives and makes our human world a better place. It is something that is a medicine that cures us, that it actually is something that is effective. And so I feel that along with the preservation of the teachings, and that this group has been extraordinarily diligent in establishing the authenticity of the teaching. With the set of these volumes at Abhayagiriya, I was using them before I left there and came here. And it's amazing the detail that the indexes and the appendices and the cross-references go into to show you the different variant readings of different passages and exactly where the texts have come from. And there's an amazing amount of work gone into establishing the authenticity and correctness of the text. But along with faithfulness to authenticity and origins and sources, we also have to be faithful to the time and the place and the situation that we are now in the 21st century. It is 2,600 years after the Buddha's enlightenment. And the teachings have been, around for a long time. But what makes them valid and useful is our adaptability, our capacity to take these principles, these words, these practices, and put them to work in this modern age, the age of artificial intelligence, where you can get a machine to recite the entire Tripitaka. Well, if it works, you know. If it obeys you, it will recite the entire Tripitaka. Yeah, this is a very different world. So I think it's important to realize both parts of the equation, both authenticity, faithfulness to our origins, and adaptability, faithfulness to our time, our place, our situation, our current world. And so that is the challenge, and I feel that also we have incredible blessings having received the teachings and the example of Venerable Ajahn Chah, and our community of many monasteries. There's more than 340 branch monasteries now. Both the monastery of Lumpur Tun Wat Tham Sang Pet in northeast Thailand is the fifth branch monastery. The legacy of Lumpur Cha's teachings and Lumpur Sumato, who established this monastery more than 35 years ago now, this is an amazing legacy that we have. We've inherited these great blessings. And I feel it's because of the adaptability of our great teachers, Lumpur Cha, Lumpur Sumato, to be able to attune to the modern age, to the hearts and minds of people alive today, and to make the Dhamma teaching something that is meaningful, both to the rice farmers of Jangwat Ubon, and to the people of Thailand, also to the people here in the UK, or also from around the world. The resident community at Amravati has about 25 different nationalities. I could recite a few, but I won't bore you. So 25 different nationalities from all around the world, from Europe, the Far East, from Australasia, America, North America, South America, you know, from all parts of the planet, so that that quality of adaptability and making our practice, our lives, our use of the teaching relevant to our own life and to the world, this is also what helps to keep the teaching alive and to make it relevant and important and valuable to everyone today. So these are a few words I offer on this occasion, and express my gratitude once more to Tan Pu Ying and the group from the World Tripitaka Foundation. Kun Noi and Kun Oh have been part of the team right from the very beginning, the kind of faithful lieutenants who make sure everything works in a good way. And also Yom Suvira, who's been joining up all the dots, putting everything together in the office and being a wonderful liaison person for this event. Also, Sister Tejasa, who's been incredibly observant and diligent in setting up all of the physical arrangements and organizing the temple and, say, thinking things through so that the ceremony could work in a very efficient and beautiful way. So, anumodana to everybody who has lent a hand today. And also especially for Kun Cho, where is she? Oh, there you are, yeah. Who came from Germany to do the flower arrangements. These didn't happen on their own. We didn't just go to B&Q and buy these. Kun Cho is a wonderful florist, flower arranger, flower artist. And she came from Germany, where she now lives especially to create the flower arrangements for today to be, say, generating a suitable and inspiring atmosphere for this occasion. So, anumodana. So that is the end of our ceremonies. We will finish by paying our respects to the Triple Gem, and then we will have a few photographs.